Welcome to Living the Gospel of Life. We bring you the latest news and information on life issues to help build up the culture of life. Thank you for listening. I'm Brian Gibson, CEO of Pro-Life Action Ministry.
And I'm Angela Erickson, a board member for Pro-Life Action Ministry.
Yes, Angela, good to be together again. I'm glad to hear the children are doing better. I know you are having a little bit of the residue of the kids in you now from the cold.
I am a little under the weather,
Well, we'll keep you in prayer. We asked everybody to pray for your children last week.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it was brutal. Alice had croup early in the week, and then she was fever cycling, and I had other kids that have issues going on with this same illness. But of course, Alice being so young, it was a little scarier. And then finally, on Saturday, late afternoon, early evening, I brought her to urgent care and got that taken care of. But yeah, she really struggled to get past it. And I can see why. This thing is hanging on. So yeah prayers are very much appreciated.
Yeah, people getting stuff like the flu and so forth this season seem to have something that's a little nastier than normal. But
yes, this is the second major, like semi long lasting illness that we've had. And the last illness that we had too was kind of like that. Every time I thought we were better and that it wasn't going to take anyone else out, it would. It was the weirdest thing. Mm. And that's kind of how this has been too. But now, of course, this one is more respiratory. And so this lingering cough is not my favorite. But I'm hoping I don't get the cough, because you know how hard it is to record a radio show or anything else for that matter when you have a cough. So
got to use the mute button a lot.
A lot. So for anyone praying for me right now, please pray. The earaches, the headaches, the mucus and stuffy nose and stuff, that's fine. Let's just at the very minimum pray that I don't end up with this nasty cough.
We're going to pray that you completely be healed and recover fully. None of this wimpy stuff. Let's get right to the whole thing. Pray big. God is big. The healer, the God of mercy and love, God of justice, goodness. Yeah.
And St. Luke, please also. The physician. Yes.
Yeah. Amen. 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 Well, hey, you know, on March 5th, 2026, Pro-Life Action Ministries will be officially 45 years in existence.
Hold on, but wait a minute. I think there's a little bit more to that story there, Brian.
Well, there's a lot to that story, but what are you looking for?
I want you to tell everyone when your anniversary is.
My anniversary? My wife
March
and I...
March 1st is 40 mine. Years.
March 1st will be my 40th.
Full time.
Right. I started as a volunteer the summer of 1981 with the ministry, actually late spring probably, so not too much further past what we mark as the beginning of the ministry. And then I was the first one to be hired as a full-time employee of the ministry 5 years later, or almost 5 years later. So yeah, March 1 will be 40 years. Deborah Brown started April 1st, a month after, or a couple months after I did. And she'll be 40 years with the ministry at that point. So
that is just amazing. You know,
a couple of us, I don't think I was even 3 years old when I started. So, something like that. Anyhow, it's funny. I was already married though.
that is so crazy.
Yeah. I thought you were going to ask me my anniversary date of getting married.
Well, when is that? Now I'm curious.
Yeah, well, it's coming up. Anyhow, it's in October. It's in late October.
Oh yeah. So, yeah, it's around the same time as my wedding anniversary. Yeah. That's right.
So anyhow, our 45th anniversary as a ministry, we're featuring a lot that has happened, a lot that God has done through this ministry, a lot of the amazing things that have happened over the past 45 years in our Sunday updates. So our Sunday updates, once a month, one of the Sundays of the month, that update is featuring our history. And it's thematic. So it's not it's not a chronology of history. It's different areas of involvement and things we have done that cover both what's what we did many years ago and what we're currently doing in some of those areas as well. So it's thematic in that sense. And last Sunday was the first Sunday that we did the first one for the anniversary. So you can catch up on that. If you don't get our Sunday updates, all you have to do is go to plam.org, our website, plam.org/newsletter. And you can sign up and start getting the Sunday updates right away. So sign up for our Sunday updates. You know, this is airing on Saturday, so you're not going to get Sunday update for tomorrow if you sign up today, but you'll get the one after that. But there's an archive on, and you can always go back and look at and listen to previous or read previous emails. I'm sorry, read previous emails like that. So the Sunday updates, and besides not just giving the history, these ongoing Sunday updates are covering topics within the abortion issue primarily. Very, very powerful, very good. I'm hearing from leaders all across the country, from people like David B. Wright and so forth, who are just amazed at how good these Sunday updates are. So these are good for your information and to be better informed, to help you live and build the culture of life as well. So a lot of good stuff in these Sunday updates. And then we have our upcoming events. So 40 Days for Life Twin Cities begins February 18th and lasts till March 28th. 40 days exactly, 40 days. So Ash Wednesday to Palm Sunday. And of course, the last 7 days of that, the 7 days up to March 28th, is our Jericho March, where each day we go out, we proceed and go around the whole block around the Planned Parenthood, the mega Planned Parenthood in St. Paul in prayer. And of course, everyone is invited to come and take time to pray sometime during the 40 Days for Life. And it's probably best to say you should come out at least once a week. Come on out. Now, our opening rally for this prayer time for this 40 Days for Life will be Ash Wednesday at 3 p.m. So come out and join us as we start the prayer for this vigil for the next 40 days. And we pray that God do amazing things, save babies from being killed, help women out so that they don't have abortions that do harm to themselves, and so forth. And of course, the big one we are always asking for, because we do ask big, that God close this place down. You know, this is the majority of abortions taking place in the entire state of Minnesota happened because of this one Planned Parenthood. So we really need to be out there praying and so forth. And then after we get done with our 40 Days for Life and our Jericho March on Palm Sunday, just 5 days later is our solemn Good Friday prayer vigil, April 3rd. And again, that's an all-day vigil. We're out there praying. We got pastors. We'll give the lineup of pastors here as we get closer. We'll have pastors every half hour throughout the day leading us in scripture and prayer, life-size cross, no signs, prayer. And so just an amazing time out there on Good Friday. So that's the upcoming stuff. Lots going on.
I hope we have nice weather. I want to go. It's been a long time since I've been able to go.
Well, the weather will be the weather. We certainly can pray that there be good weather. And sometimes that happens and sometimes it doesn't. So, but we're out there, whether it's rain or snow or whether it's sunny or warm, whether it's freezing.
I can't bring
cold.
My kids if the weather is not as great.
But we're out there. And of course, we do the buses and all that stuff on
Good Friday, it's always seamless. Yep.
We make this pretty easy and so forth. So, like that. And now that the federal surge operation is announced that it's coming to an end and being shut down, the concerns about the anti-ICE violence will have dissipated long before then. So
that is good news.
Excited about that too. So yes, as well as ICE violence in some cases too. Okay. So I didn't talk about this last week, and Angela, you were out ill, but I thought it'd be good to bring this up. There was an ad during the Super Bowl that was very important, and probably the highlight of the entire Super Bowl phenomenon. Now, you know, I played football, I coached football. I got a brother that ended up getting a Super Bowl ring. So, you know, I'm you know, football family, all that junk, right? So I can easily get enwrapped in sports, coached other sports as well and so forth. So this is way better than the game. And of course, the middle of the game, they do this thing they call their halftime show, which this year was just as horrible as it's ever been, I guess. I didn't see any of it, thank goodness.
Yeah, me either.
The ads. So for a long time, the ads were a big thing. You go to the, you watch the Super Bowl for the ads, because these companies would do these real creative and sometimes very humorous things for advertising. But in recent years, some of that advertising has gotten pretty lousy.
Not even funny anymore.
Not much better than the halftime shows. But there was an ad on adoption. And it premiered during the Super Bowl. The intention is that it will continue to be aired on television and other venues as well. The organization is called Adoption Is. The video was titled The Girl in the Middle, and it just was seeking to end stigma, fear, and judgment and bring good information forward that interferes with women choosing adoption rather than abortion or parenting if they're in a position where they're not able to do that. So it was a very good ad. The person behind it, the only thing we know about this person that started this, is a child that was adopted in 1955, him or herself, and is wanting to give back and make a difference. That's all we know about the person.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I know. And that's fine. Being anonymous and putting forward really good stuff.
That's kind of beautiful. Yeah.
It is fun. Now, comments. There were comments that were posted after the airing of this. Most of the comments were very positive. You've got people, here's one that's quoting it a little bit. It says, "Wow, amazing. This brought me to tears. I was 21 and a senior in college. I found I was pregnant that fall. My boyfriend had abandoned me. I choose life and I choose adoption." Goes on from there. Another adoptee says, "As an adopted child myself, my birth mother chose life and I'm forever grateful for that." So these are the type of real super positive things that came forward. But there were those who were negative to no end. And it's just bizarre to me to have people who are so pro-abortion that they get angry about advertising for adoption. One person claimed, "Abortion care is a good thing." And now, speaking of the ad, "This is sick." Okay. My wife and I are adoptive parents. Our two children are both adopted. Why is it sick? Just beyond understanding that people talk and think that way for me.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, we've talked about the University of Notre Dame in the past couple of weeks and how they have decided to hire a woman named Susan Osterman as an associate professor of global affairs that's what she is, and has now been named the director of the Liu Institute for Asian and Asian Studies. So now a director of an institute within the University of Notre Dame. She is an outspoken pro-abortion activist. She has described abortion laws as a form of violence and has said that abortion is a way for women to obtain freedom. Again, living in that dark, horrible place in her mind. Not only has that happened, but now we've got some people who are resigning in protest over this promotion. Students have come out, student groups have come out, but now we've got some people that work at the University of Notre Dame. One is a law professor and a professor emeritus, and a second one is a professor emeritus. Both have resigned. And then we have the bishop of that Notre Dame resides within, of Fort Wayne, South Bend, Indiana. This is Bishop Kevin Rhodes expressing his dismay and strong opposition to Notre Dame's appointment of this woman to this position. And of course, it talks about she's disqualified because of her positions and so forth that are in complete contradiction with Catholic teaching and so forth. So, some good statements coming from the bishop right there, as well as you know, others that are taking action accordingly. It's just so disappointing, disconcerting, so difficult to watch those with the Catholic institutional name on them, who are supposed to be foundational Catholic higher learning institutions, not just compromise. This isn't just compromise.
No.
This is turning their back on the unborn.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's outright defiance, right? It's Protestant in nature. They're protesting from within. And I think that is egregious. We should not have professors, people who represent the church in such a public way. It's a great scandal. And it's damaging to the faithful. It's damaging to how people see and perceive the Catholic Church. I think especially in a time when people are looking for direction, they're looking for strength and looking for an institution like the Catholic Church to say, this is the truth. And we're uniform on this. This is what the church teaches. And we don't allow people to publicly dissent and destroy the faith of those who are trying to adhere to the teachings of the church.
Right. Right. Exactly. Exactly. So just, you know, and I think it's important to also look at this and understand this from the point of view of this involvement with Asia. Asia, of course, the largest country in Asia, highest population country in Asia, is China. And the Chinese practice of one child, now two child policies, forced abortions, have just been decimating on their own national population. Of course, on the individuals who have been killed because of these efforts and policies and so forth. And her involvement in these Asian studies and so forth, actually promoting the killing of babies, actually becomes something that is on her soul and on her, on where she's at in life.
It's pretty interesting. Have we covered that China is now taxing contraceptives in their country?
No, we have not covered that yet. No.
So because they have such a birth deficit and their population has declined so much and they cannot get their citizens to have enough children, they're actually now taxing things like condoms and contraception to discourage the use of contraceptives in their citizens. That's how bad it is. It's crazy.
Yeah, but to really get a good grip on that one is it's families are not having more than one child, even though they've expanded to two child policy. Yep. This is just to add one more child to the family that they won't do.
Yeah.
Because they've been so ingrained in this conditioning for decade after decade after decade that they can't have children. They can only have one child. Now when they're being told they can have two, they don't want to have more than one.
No. Part of it too is I wonder, let's say you do have that second child, and then what happens if you get pregnant again? I mean, then you're forced to have an abortion. You know what I mean?
Like, it's still
there. I mean, that's a scary prospect too. I feel like too, I'm sure there are a lot of women who are like trying to create a buffer so that, you know, let's say they do accidentally get pregnant again, then, at least we can have two. But they're going to try and avoid it to the best that they possibly can. I'm just thinking how I would view that if I lived in that country. I don't know that I would feel safe having to if I know that something happened and I end up having more babies than that. I mean,
there's not much safe about living in a communist country in the first
place. Absolutely not. Nope. And that's the root of it, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is. It is. Atheistic communism.
Yeah. Atheistic communism is a philosophy of self-annihilation.
Well, shifting gears a little bit here, the organization Live Action, they do some very good work. I love some of the work they're doing and been watching for a long time. In fact, we do a lot of our stories where we're pulling up from their news feeds that they push forward. They have just started a multi-series on the FDA and the abortion pill safety protocols and so forth. So they're doing a deep dive into the abortion pill and the FDA. Okay. And the first of the series are talking about who paid for the removal of the safety protocols back in 2016. So this first story, it's so interesting. There's so much stuff here, and we can't go through everything in great detail, but some of the highlights. One is the original allowance for the abortion pill in the United States came from the FDA in the year 2000. And the company that was given, that had done all the work before the FDA to be able to get the abortion pill approved by the FDA, is a company called Danko Laboratories. Danko, funded by some very large funds out there, the Warren Buffett, or it's the Buffett Foundation, but it's named for his wife, not for himself. Warren Buffett is the one that puts the money into it. And then there's the John D. Rockefeller funded Population Council, and then there is the Hewlett, or the Packard Foundation, part of the Hewlett-Packard company money that does that. So these very large, very well-funded foundations push the money forward in order for Danko Laboratories to come into existence and to be able to get the abortion pill pushed through the FDA, okay? So in 2000, the FDA put out set of rules that needed to be followed, the protocols. We're following it. They're called REMS. And so those safety protocols were there for the women, because this drug is intended to kill, and it killed babies. Let's not get that wrong. Whenever we're talking about the abortion pill and we're talking about what the FDA is doing, the bottom line is the pill kills living human beings, and it's the highest used form of killing babies in the United States today. But the REMS and everything else, safety protocols, this risk evaluation and mitigation strategies, are meant for the safety of the women. So they put them into place. They're pretty strong. And then in 2015, Danko Laboratories, the only abortion pill manufacturer in the United States at the time, doesn't have, or is saying they don't have, enough money to go back to the FDA to change the policies to allow the REMS to be loosened, the safety protocols to be loosened. But all of a sudden in 2016, they've got the money, they've got the funding. So there's a big question mark. Who put up the money for this? Now, there's one more little point to this, though, is there seemed to be a reluctance on Danko's part to have these abortion pill REMS changed, because in doing so, it was going to open the door for other companies to come in and start doing the same drug. So there was a concern they're going to lose the market. They're not going to have it all to themselves. Sure. And that actually ended up happening in 2016. So under the Obama administration, we had these REMS loosened. Now it removed the requirement that women seeking the abortion, or teen girls for that matter, they must take the abortion pill drug in front of a clinician in person, and at the location of a certified prescriber. In other words, a physician and a clinician need to be involved, and you got to be there in person. The other thing they removed was a requirement for the reporting of the drug's non-fatal adverse complications. So if there are complications to the use of the abortion pill, the only thing that needs to be reported to the FDA is when somebody dies.
Awful.
I mean, they could be on close to death, but that doesn't count. They could be injured for the rest of their life. That does not count.
Pretty standard, though. I mean, even when we were talking about VAERS and Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, it's like so severely underreported. Just all of this stuff. This is very typical of big pharma, right? Well,
and then they also expanded the time frame in which abortion can take place using the abortion pill. The original length was 7 weeks gestation. That was as far as you could go in giving out the abortion pill, and it was moved to 10 weeks.
Right.
Okay. Now, in 2023, the Biden administrator further takes regulations out of the REMS Now they're allowing for no test, mail order, pharmacy dispensing. And of course, that portion alone caused this great increase in the use of the abortion pill to kill unborn children. Mm-hmm. Just fascinating to go through and look at this and understand how this all works. If you want to learn more, I'm sure in one of our Sunday updates, we'll have a link to this, but you can already go to liveaction.org and find it for yourself if you'd like to. Just very good. And, you know, on the same subject, you know, almost a year ago, maybe a year ago, we started getting promise from the Trump administration through their FDA, HHS, that they were going to do a deep dive and reinvestigation and relook at the abortion pill. And here it is all this much time later, and nothing has happened so far at all. So this past week, Senator Josh Hawley from Missouri, he was with others in a closed door meeting talking to the leader of the FDA on this, Marty McAray, the commissioner. And when they left the meeting, Senator Hawley was saying that the FDA is not serious about this and doesn't think they're proceeding with any sense of urgency whatsoever. People like Tony Perkins from the Family Research Council is saying more bluntly that that this was behind closed doors, which says a lot, and they're not expecting anything to be done by this administration with regard to the abortion pill.
We've talked about this too before. Like, the abortion pill is the number one way that women are procuring abortion these days. And it is dangerous, especially with the lack of REMS. And so it is very frustrating. I was reliably informed that this is the most pro-life administration the country has ever seen. And yet we won't even put some guardrails in place on the primary way that women are procuring abortion.
Well, and you know what, even forget the FDA and their rules for just one moment. Just a mental exercise here. In reality, we have the Comstock law, and the federal law prohibits the mailing of abortion drugs anywhere in the United States, period. It's against the law to take these devices across state lines anywhere in the United States. So it's not just by mail, it's by any type of common carrier that the abortion pill cannot be sent around. And the only reason the Comstock laws were not being enforced prior to 2022 was Roe v. Wade, because the U.S. Supreme Court had created this false claim to a right to abortion nationally. As soon as Dobbs came down, Comstock becomes alive again. Yeah. And no effort whatsoever on the administration to look at that. So much could be done with that all by itself. And then again, right, like you're saying, Angela, the carelessness about women are being hurt badly by the abortion pill. And we're not even requiring that the abortion organizations out there report the harm that's coming to the women unless they die. So, yeah.
Pretty low standard of care there. And that is kind of the overall frustrating part, I think, of women's health in general, is that usually the bar is so low. For example, even in labor, that they're happy. Well, at least your baby is happy and healthy. At least your baby is alive. It's like, yeah, but what about treating women like they're not cattle in labor? I mean, it's just an overarching theme, I think, when it comes to women's medical care.
Now, states are doing something about this. A couple states are. There's a Senate committee in West Virginia that's seeking to restrict the abortion pill distribution, and in the South Carolina House has passed a bill to outlaw mail order abortion pills. We've got a couple other states that have done that as well, and unfortunately, because the at the federal level it's not being done, states are having to pick it up, and that just gives us the patchwork that isn't working very well so far. We keep running into those issues. All the time we have today. Thank you, and God bless you.